So we're sitting here on the set. We just wrapped the video shoot for my new single featuring, well, I'm going to get to that, but it's called Anymore. And I hope you get to enjoy it really soon. But anyway, I am so excited because I get to introduce you to my world.
Yes.
This is my nephew.
Yep.
He's my brother in Christ. Yeah. He's my friend. He's my homie. But his name is Chandler Moore, and he's doing some amazing things with a group that you probably are hearing out there, a worship group called Maverick City that's tearing it up across the nation. Dropped several projects in the last year, a handful of Grammy nominations. But anyway, my brother in Christ, my nephew, my friend, my homie, Chandler Moore.
What up? What up? I'm just happy to be sitting with the legend, living legend. I mean, even to y'all who are watching and, you know, you may have heard it about from my side, and you may not know who this legendary living guy is. This is world famous Tony Williams. But Tony Williams, I mean, his credit list of accomplishments and people he's worked with and done stuff for and helped build is just very, very long. But he's just an honor to, you know, work with my aunt and, you know, build this with him.
Well, you know, it's interesting I think it's very interesting that we're here because we both come from, or not the extent of our background, but something that we're currently doing, projects that we're on. Yeah. I talked about Maverick City, but also
Sunday Service.
My background with Sunday Service.
Yeah.
And as different as the two collectives are, there's a lot of similarities, but I really thought it was very interesting, the comparisons and the similarities of how both collectives were started organically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I find myself often explaining exactly, I remember the time when we first got together, when you were explaining about how you guys started, and can kind of share with us a little bit about how that collective started and the trajectory to where it is right now.
Absolutely. So we started as a writing group camp. We just gathered a whole bunch of songwriters together, and our founder, Tony Brown, you met Tony, the homie, my big brother, just got a whole bunch of writers in a room who would have never met before, or may would have taken 8-10 plus years to met, but he
from different areas of the country?
From different areas of the country.
Really?
Different genres of music, black, white,
so everybody wasn't like a worship leader?
Nah, not everybody was a worship leader.
Really?
No, but songwriters. Most people were songwriters.
I see.
We got in a room, spent like 2.5 days together, and spent some time writing. And we realized that the songs, the goal was to just really change the scope of where Christian gospel worship music was going.
Mm-hmm.
And to write songs that were way more authentic. That was the goal. And then, you know, we realized, we're like, man, but these songwriters, they're like great artists as well. So why not, you know, try to sing our own songs while we're writing?
Right.
And that's kind of how Maverick started, and now it is what it is.
So how did y'all start putting the songs out? How did they start?
So our first thing that we did, Volume 1, was literally we were in Redding, California.
Okay.
And we wrote a couple songs that week, and we were just going to demo them. So we can shop the songs, try to send them to different people, see if they wanted it. So we demoed the songs, and the demo actually turned out. I was like, dang, okay, maybe we can release this. And we released it without even having really a name for ourselves, kind of figured it out last minute. And it just took off. It was like, dang, people really responded to it. And, you know, we just kind of kept following
up. This was all audio or video? Because I remember the early video.
Yep, we did video that day, too, just to kind of see what it was. We'll see what would happen with it.
Right.
Literally, we gathered people from Redding, called them that day. It was like, hey, we want to try something out tonight. Come out just like a little worship night. But we really want to sing these songs to people. But, you know, we just kind of want to feel it out. And
one of the things I remember from those early videos was just the how organic it was. It just didn't feel staged or contrived. It was like very relaxed and natural.
Yeah. Even so, Volume 2 is when people started kind of like, and we did it in a studio called 1971 in Atlanta. I think that's the video you're talking about, where there was, you know, we had people all around. We were standing next to a piano.
Exactly.
Those were literally what would happen is we would get together, write songs like a day or two before. And then that night we'll record it. We'd be like, hey, and then post on Instagram like an hour before, be like, all right, meet us at 1971 real quick just to hang out. And you know, like 80, 90, 100, 150 people would come up, and that room was so small, if we had 50, it looked packed. So it was like 80 people in there, packed up, hot, sweating.
It's funny you say 50, because the very first
Sunday service
yep. was 50 people. There was yep. 50 guests.
It's the same vibe.
We had 45 voices in the choir. Man. We actually ultimately got to about 150 at our biggest, at our strongest. Yeah. But the first Sunday we did it, it was 45. The original 45 voices, we had 50 guests. Mm. And the thing about it, I liked how organic, what it reminds me of, as a matter of fact, I was just having this conversation with Jermaine Dupri and Ye just a week ago. And we were talking about the beginning of it, because if you notice those very first Sunday services, that's when we had the colored lights and stuff. But there was 45 guests, and we had big pillows on the floor. So there was people sitting on the floor, people sitting on the benches. Yeah. And at that point, just like you guys, we didn't know where it was actually going to go. Yeah. But what it reminded me of, what I like to explain it as, holidays at Kanye and I's grandparents' house. So when we grew up, we spent all our holidays at my grandparents' house, our grandparents in Oklahoma City. And like before or after dinner, we'd all get together in the living room. My aunt be on one piano, my other aunt be on the, or my mom would be on the organ, or my grandmother. And all of us cousins and uncles and aunts would be the room. And everybody knew, you know, sopranos, altos, everybody had their parts. And it was hymns, Christmas carols, Negro spirituals, and a little bit of Donny Hathaway. And that was Thanksgiving and Christmas.
That's crazy, man.
And for me, the first Sunday service was recreating that environment, was that being relaxed, somebody sitting on the floor, you could get up, walk around, go get a drink if you want. And it was just about bringing people into what it was like growing up in my grandmother's house. And that was the feel that we were trying to get across for that the original Sunday service. So
you can feel it. Like you can feel, I think the cool thing about, you know, Mavin Sunday service is that when you're watching a video or if you're listening to the albums, you're not just like listening, but you're also feeling, like it's almost like you're in the room. I remember watching one of the first videos that y'all did. And I remember watching them in my house in Atlanta, and I was in my living room like, dang, like my living room actually feels like exactly probably what that room feels like. Watching it with some of my friends. So I think that's the cool thing about what you're saying with your family, like that Thanksgiving time, that Christmas, it was an authentic feeling that can translate in any arena, in any room, because everybody could find themselves in it and connect with it. I think that's the cool thing about what we do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Similarities in the textures of our tones,
for sure,
and the thickness of it, and the timbre of the voices. Your tone is like a throwback tone, I think.
I can feel that.
So I'm very, you know what? And people are in interviews that I've been asked, like, what were my early influences? And I think that people often expect, because I do have those influences that were records that. But my actual influences came from my house and my church.
Yeah.
Because I think if you were in my house, you'd say, I sound a lot like, actually like my father.
That's crazy.
You know, because my father sings. And, and it's like that old guy that sang on the back row in the bass section at my church was like where I was getting those chops and feels from, was like, you know, old men that have gone on.
For sure.
But, you know, in my church growing up back home in Oklahoma City.
Sure.
So, like, can you really draw on, like, what your influences were, like, vocally or stylistically, I should say?
I think because growing up, I was a sponge. So, like, anything I heard, anything I listened to, anything I was around, I kind of took in and like placed it where it needed to be as far as in my skills.
So like who? But like, give me some examples.
One person for sure. My dad's a musician.
Right.
So my dad's raspy tone and like, I gotta let you hear my dad one time. My dad sings. And then one person
Obviously, somebody you've been around sings. Yeah. Obviously.
Well, somebody I used to listen to almost every day was this guy named PJ Morton. PJ.
I just did a record with PJ. Well, love we featured PJ. on a record.
My bro,
together.
I love PJ.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. PJ ridiculous.
I listened to a lot of PJ. I used to listen to, so this is gonna be weird because you probably don't see it much. Michael Jackson, I used to listen. My first CD that my parents ever bought me was a Michael Jackson CD.
The first album I ever had was the first Jackson 5 album, ABC.
That's crazy.
That was the first album that mine I owned, my personal record. That
Invincible.
My
Invincible, You Rock My World.
Mine was the original first Jackson 5 album. Crazy. I just dated myself.
It was some things that I received, like, I'm a big ad-lib guy.
Okay.
So there was some ad-libs that Michael just used to do that, like, placement as far as, like, riffs, yeah, and what you would say,
right,
that I was just like, dang. So I like took that in, even subconsciously listening to it. Now I look back, I'm like, dang, I can see where I got that from. Some gospel greats, Ty Tribbett is like,
okay,
one of my, like, as far as like influence, mm-hmm, his creativity is insane.
Okay, so Michael Jackson to Ty Tribbett. So you was listening to secular, obviously.
Oh man, yeah.
But you grew up in the church.
My dad's a pastor.
Was raised under a pew. I was born into church.
Absolutely. I was born in church.
Absolutely.
Born in church. Going to church at least three times a week.
Three times a week. But you had a lot of influence that were out of the secular world.
Oh yeah. And I love that about my, you know, growing up, my journey and growing up with music. My parents didn't box me in as far as,
yeah.
No, you can't listen
to
that.
So my mother was a church pianist,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, my dad played piano too, yeah. So I was able to be open to a lot of different experiences, especially in church. I don't think we understand that, like, we have a lot of different musical styles in church, just gathering one. Some Sundays, it got blues. Some Sundays, you got rock with certain things that you do, especially my church growing up. You used to do CCM gospel. We used to have little performances, little country type feel. So growing up in a musical church like that definitely helped me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my favorite album for like 6 years?
Which one?
It was an album you worked heavily on. I just thought about it.
Late Registration?
Nope.
College Dropout?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So were you, what was there something in that inspired you? It was like what element of it?
It was the mixture of what people say wasn't hip hop.
Absolutely.
Like the production.
Yes.
People would be like, you know, at the time it was just like a little racy conversation, but like the mixture of what you guys did and how you guys layered that music, it taught me, like, now math, how people, like, in the gospel world, people say, like, oh, how are you putting, like, that type of soul on these CCM lyrics, on white lyrics? You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's
the
where I was about
merge
to go
of what happened on that record was, it kind of influenced me in ways I didn't realize.
Yeah, yeah. You kind of answered my next thought is how, coming out of the church, because I hear so many other influences that come from not just black church.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Because that was my early experience, was a black church. And then I had a very interesting experience because I grew up during the funk era. So my influences were a lot of the funk group. And growing up in Oklahoma City, of course, everything Charlie Wilson and Gap Band.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you knew this, but Kanye and I had an aunt that had an urban choir, a youth choir that was kind of like Kirk Franklin's Our God's Property of 1970s. And it was all teenagers, although I was one of the youngest, like, yeah, 8 or 9 years old. But the Wilson brothers from the Gap Band, Charlie, Ronnie, and Wilson, were in the choir.
That is insane.
So Charlie was literally like my real uncle,
dang,
growing up. So he's like my real uncle Charlie, yeah, to a degree. But it was black church. But then later on, it was after I was an adult and actually doing music professionally that I stumbled into an alternative rock world and just started experimenting with different colors and textures and tendencies, yeah, musically.
Yeah.
I think when I listen to you, I see the range of not just, you know, it's gospel and it's soul,
yeah,
but there's a breath there that you don't get with all R&B artists that, yeah, I think is magical. And that's something I can really appreciate about your style, so.
That means a lot.
Dope. But one of the things I was just thinking, you guys just finished a tour.
Yeah.
And I got to see, I think it was like the third show, the LA show.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal. Yeah. But I just want to say, because it's been a few years, I think it's been like 4 years since our last tour. Now, we traveled. I guess that people could call the Sunday service. It was kind of a tour, but like a real tour, like tour bus tour, like out.
Production.
Was like the Pablo tour, which was like 4 years ago. So every time I go to like a really dope show, I get a little antsy and a little envious. So first of all, I just want to ask, how'd your voice hang up? How did it hold up?
Surprisingly, because my voice.
And then tell me about tour. Like, how was it?
My voice stamina is questionable at times. So
really,
but
when I hear you, your voice is just so strong,
and
I get
hard
jealous.
Every time I sing like it's my
last
time.
You sing hard like it's your last time singing.
So throughout 28, 27, 29 cities, my voice lasted. I mean, it started getting tired maybe like the second to last date, right before, I think that was Charlotte or Columbia.
Yeah.
But Atlanta, the last day I ended strong, and I was just, I was super proud of my voice.
Mm-hmm. I always felt like the longer you go on a tour, the stronger I usually get.
It's
when I'm doing one-offs. Show once every month or something is when I wear down. But when I'm singing every day on tour, I feel that I get stronger throughout the tour.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it definitely increased my voice. Like, working out definitely got my voice stronger.
Yeah. I saw the show, like I said, in L.A., and I was on the front row.
Tour was crazy.
Thank you for the tickets on
the
front row.
Tour was crazy.
The show was crazy. And I saw even after that, the show even got, it looked like by the time you got to Barclays, was really crazy.
Yeah.
So you guys aren't done, right? So if you get a chance to see Maverick City.
Got one more left.
One more?
December 11th.
You got to see it. It's an experience.
Yeah.
It's an experience with God. So
we out again next year though.
Okay.
So we got a whole bunch. We gotta bring you on tour. We gotta get you on at least two shows.
Let me do a song.
Two shows.
Let's go.
Two shows.
I mean, y'all heard him.
Two shows. We're getting Tony Williams on two shows.
My brother, Chandler Moore, anymore. And I just want to talk about the song. First of all, I think it's an amazing song. We first heard this back in the summer, right? At one of the co-producers, studio guy I've worked with forever, Haskell Jackson, co-produced by him and Femi Owentunde. Man, it's Kumasi Washington on horn.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Kind of a different backdrop as it's kind of like a kind of
completely
jazz.
Different feel for me too.
Completely different feel. I remember the first time we went in the studio and just kind of scattered
Let me first talk about, I've never done that before. I think you taught me a new method though.
Okay.
Got in the studio. His producer's going through a whole bunch of tracks.
Right.
And we picked this one. He's like, Chandler, just jump in there and just start singing. And I was like, okay.
Okay.
And I mean, even on the edit track, I wish we could show him some of the edit. I was just, what do you do? And I've never done it, but it brought a creativity that I'd never thought about before.
Well, you know what? I am actually envious of the way you guys create. So I was in the studio with this guy and Aaron Moses from Maverick City in Atlanta.
Dang, I forgot about that.
But you know what? Because you guys have such a worship background. So we're in the studio and they're playing, Aaron's on piano and Chandler may have been on piano or Aaron was on drums and they were just vibing. And I'm sitting like, they just warming up like, okay, we're gonna get started anytime. So after about 30 minutes, I'm like, when are we gonna start? They were like, we started. We've been started for 30 minutes. Which was totally like foreign to my creative process.
Wow.
Because I'm very analytical. It's you know, sit down, let's get these melody, top line melodies. Let me write and structure everything. So I come from a very structured environment. You come from a very impromptu, spontaneous environment. So it's very interesting bringing these two environments together.
I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I do remember that. But I never thought you came from a structure.
No, I'm very structured.
I get it now. I see it now. Though.
I'm very rigid and very not very spontaneous at all
So was it out of your nature to do what you threw me in the booth to do that?
No, that's typically what I'll do is we'll go in the studio. If I go in the studio and hear a new track, I don't like to listen to a new track without having the mic hot.
Got it.
Because typically the first thing that comes out is the magic.
True.
So that's why I wanted you at the mic when the track rolled and I wanted you to just whatever came
that's
out,
great.
Which I captured just a piece of what you came out with melodically, and that was the basis for what I wrote the record to.
I remember
was basically the energy that just came out of you naturally, and I just kind of took it and shaped it and formed
Genius.
It. What I want to capture, what the song felt like, it felt very somber. What anymore means, basically, it means never again in this context.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an apology song. I think sometimes being able to wrap your brain, and we as men sometimes struggle with apologizing for our shortcomings.
For sure.
So I thought that was the way to express. And you know what the most magical thing is, that when I go back and I listen to the song, some of it I don't remember writing. And I feel like, and I've heard people express sometimes that God like took their pen and like wrote the song for them. I even feel like some of the sentiments and some of the words that I actually expressed in the songs are words that in my own self words and concepts and sentiments that aren't exactly sentiments that I
get that.
Have felt comfortable expressing.
Yeah.
So I do feel like the song was kind of written almost supernaturally.
Yeah, I get that.
I remember after the song was written, even your, what did you say to me after we recorded your part in the studio about not having originally heard the song?
Like I didn't. When I first heard the track, I was like, what are we gonna do with this? I mean,
it didn't register at all?
Not at all. I mean, I was in that booth just trying to scat away. I'm like, what? And then what you turned into, I was like, oh shoot, wow. Anymore.
I just wanna thank you, bro, for like doing this collab. It's nothing better than, so, and I have to say, this is probably one of my favorite collaborations that I've ever done. It's probably one of the one of my favorite records, period, that I've ever done. And I just want to thank you again, man, for jumping on this record
thank
with me.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for thinking about me.
I just hope everybody enjoys it.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. Anymore, December 10th. Yeah.
Anymore.
World famous Tony Williams.
Chandler Moore.
Peace.